Welcome to the Marco Bezzecchi podcast, formerly Motorsport 101. Why not Bez? Why not Bez?
Why not Bez? Why not Bez?
The why
Let
not
me tell
Bez
you why not Mir.
He started already. Welcome to episode 629 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison, and welcome to the 22nd and final MotoGP review of 2025.
It's over. We finally made it to the end. It feels like it took all year, because it kind of did.
It's kind of wild that, I mean, because we actually were able to get all the races in this time around as opposed to last year, this was, by two rounds, the biggest MotoGP season we've ever had, and it felt like every one of those 22 races by the end of the year. This is a collective, we're tired, boss, let me tell you. But the amount of Goldberg and Taylor Swift references in our chat as we record this episode is already obscene, quite frankly. But we're going to get through this. Round 22, the season finale of MotoGP in 2025, and it's nice to be able to say it was back at Valencia this year after the horrific flooding that they went through last year. I, for one, am just glad that we were able to say we can go back to Valencia and the traditional MotoGP season finale. Even though half the press box was talking about they should move the decider to Sepang instead. I'm just like, oh, damn, okay.
I think we should move every decider and indeed every round to Phillip Island. Who says
I agree. That's Cameron Buckley. Hello, Cam. How's it going?
A mixed bag. It is a mixed bag in this end of MotoGP year, as I have to sit on a podcast for the better part of an hour, maybe more, maybe less, and not blow out my microphone ranting about Yoan Mir. I'm going to do my best.
This could be a long 45 minutes for all of us involved. Because we watch these races on our Discord server, which you can get an invite to if you back us on Patreon or if you ask me really, really nicely somewhere on the internet. Cam Buckley exploded at the end of that sprint. Let me tell you.
No, it was at the start. I went through all five stages of grace and was just kind of like giggling angry for the rest of the sprint.
I said at the end because he was still ranting by the end of the sprint itself. He didn't.
Oh, that rant didn't end until like halfway through the Grand Prix.
Oh yeah, pretty much. It was extensive, shall we say. Also joining me, who's got back from another round of testing and doing actual professional journalism work, God bless his heart, is Mr. RJ O'Connell. How was the latest trip, my friend?
It is very tempting to just want to just like go take the quarter mile trips into and out of Daytona International Speedway to the big shopping mall, that outdoor shopping center they built across the street. It's very nice, but it's very dangerous because, you know, you have less time to go chase down every new and updated prototype and GT car as they're being loaded out of a trailer for the first time. We don't know what any of this is going to look like. And I don't know all the differences between the two unless they're just screaming it right in my face. But, you know, gentlemen, I think we're burying the lead here. What an interesting set of outcomes in our preseason predictions, right? Oh. Because as I look at this graph that we have here, so we got a spreadsheet here of all of our predictions, and what it kind of looks like is the Danish flag, except the white cross is green, because in the second column, it's a five columns, three rows, second column, we all picked Aprilia to be second best factory. That's not a big surprise. Y'all got every other prediction wrong except the big one.
Except for the one that actually matters.
And I got all the predictions right except the big one.
Yes, he got the Riders' Champion of this year cataclysmically wrong because, much like every other weekend since Japan, Pecco Bagnaia, why are you the way that you are? Never has that been truer than it has felt in these past 2 months. I will also say, RJ, How was the arena?
What arena are we talking? Oh, Waffle House, dude. It's Waffle House, dog. It was chill. It was completely chill. I felt bad that I couldn't finish all my hash browns.
Oh,
but otherwise it was good. Left the 25% chip tip and everything.
You left hash browns on the table. That's a crime right there, man.
My stomach was bothering me that day. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, like, it's not been a great year for me in predictions this year. I'm not going to lie to you. It's Scott McLaughlin punched me in the dick, and then...
See, none of us have gotten any as wrong as Scott McLaughlin not starting the Indianapolis 500.
Headlines are reading around all across the newspapers is Nostradamus finished?
He might be. Nostradamus might be washed in the corner, like Graham Rahal. Now,
you know what this means? It means in 2026, whenever you inevitably ace all these predictions, you could just play this back in the montage reel in the hype video, showing that you how you proved all the haters, the doubters, and the critics wrong.
Next year will be glorious. I'm not going to fuck around next year for entertainment purposes. We're picking Alex Palou for everything.
He's starting to learn. In fairness to Ostre, the over under 5.5 different winners, I think we would have been all right on that had Marco Bezzecchi not killed Mark Marquez in Indonesia.
Yeah, I was looking really good on this one until the flyaways when Fermin Aldeguer and Raul Fernandez both won a Grand Prix down the stretch. Like, if you predicted that going into this season, I would like to have your lottery numbers, please and thank you. Because well done you. But just a quick reminder, those predictions we had before we get into the proper intro, the categories were third in rider standings, because we thought it was going to be a factory Ducati beaten down, which it kind of was, just not in the way we kind of thought it was going to be. Me and Cam both said Alex Marquez. It turned out that was Marco Bezzecchi, which is what RJ predicted. He was full in on the why not Bez, and he was right. So fair play to him. We all said second factory was going to be a prettier. That was obviously proven correct. The over-under was at 5.5 different winners. Turns out there were 7 across the season. Me and Cam both went under. RJ went over and got that correct. Wendy also, because of Ducati's dominance, we also went 20.5 out of 22 for Ducati victories. Turns out it was only 17 this year.
Oh, it's a down year.
They only
swept everything available.
I mean, what was it? 20? Was it 19 out of 20 last year for Ducati? And this time was only 17 out of 22? What a problem to have. Again, me and Cam both went over. RJ went under. The only thing that RJ got wrong was who ended up ultimately being champion. Me and Cam both said Mark Marquez. RJ said Pecco Bagnaia, RJ
it kind of undoes the rest of the good work.
What can I say? It's not as fun when the whole panel of predictions is just like, yeah, we're all picking this one team. Yeah, we're all picking the Pats to beat the Giants.
Oh, heaven forbid we have common sense, okay? F me, am I right?
Look, not everyone's football team can be 9-2, right, Dre?
No, it can't be. It's good times when you win 8 in a row. It's great times indeed. Anyway, look, you beat the Bucks as well. Good for you, RJ. It was a good win. Good win.
Finally, we can stop the anxiety for a change.
Oh boy. That was our MotoGP predictions for the season. Safe to say that RJ O'Connell wins this round. Well played, sir. Well played. He can have that one.
Everything but the championship.
That's right. I am the 1988 Mercedes AMG of motorcycle racing predictions games. Dre, tell us where you can find this podcast if you're new or if you're familiar. Just want a reminder.
Indeed. Places you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you have to follow us personally, you can do so on Blue Sky at Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell, and cbuckley917.bsky.social. If you want to check out video highlights of the show, you can do so on our TikTok and Instagram pages. Instagram, motorsport101pod, and TikTok at m101_podcast. If you can check out our website, motorsport101.com. patreon.com, where you can read my full written thoughts on that final round of the season at Valencia. Put a nice, neat little bow on everything to come out of the MotoGP season, pretty much, there. Oh, stick around as well. My full written thoughts on the MotoGP season will be out by the time this goes out. So Friday, we'll have part one covering Moto 3, Moto 2, and the Japanese Cup over Honda and Yamaha. Part two will be out next week on Aprilia, KTM, Ducati, and putting a nice, neat little bow on everything in MotoGP this year. The podcast version will be in a couple of weeks' time, so just bear that in mind. All that on our website, motorsport101.com, is out of all of our content. And if you're really lucky, so you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Jason and Raptor and Kira are doing so right now. Thank you very much, folks, for your ongoing support. Nailed the intro. There you go. Next up, after this quick musical interlude, we will talk about MotoGP season finale at Valencia.
Dre said it at the top. We are back to finish this 22-round season at Valencia. Alex Marquez took himself another sprint victory on Saturday over Pedro Acosta. After one of the tightest qualifying sessions in recent memory, with the top five riders separated by less than a tenth of a second. Then we get to Sunday, where another overnight adjustment brought out the best in Aprilia's Marco Bezzecchi, who led from lights to flag to take his third win of the season. But the Italian was hounded all the way to the line by Trackhouse's Raul Fernandez.
Trackhouse?
finished just 6 tenths of a second behind. And further behind them, Fabio Di Giantonio did just enough to preserve Ducati's consecutive streak of Grand Prix with a Ducati bike on the podium, a streak that lasted 88 races, which is a number you didn't used to think too much about until all the worst people you know started making you have to do a double take. Anyway, DJ Antonio just... Jr. I'm not talking about that. DJ Antonio just beat Pedro Acosta to third place, but of course, another banner day for Aprilia, a 1-2 finish for the first time since Catalunya 2023, the first time an Aprilia rider has won back-to-back in the MotoGP era, first time an Aprilia rider has won three times in a single season. Now, this is not our 2026 preview show. This is not even our 2025 wrap-up, so don't want to lift the lid too much, but Dre, heading out of the Valencia test that followed, we got a few months. Is Marco Bezzecchi now the biggest threat to Marc Marquez and Ducati's reign in MotoGP?
Bitch, he might be. To borrow a creative phrase on that one. I've been preaching and singing his praises since the summer break on this podcast all back half of the year long. Can anybody argue against me on this one that Marco Bezzecchi has not been the defining rider of the second half of this season? Because I think he has. I think that's more than without saying. He was going into the summer hot. He was in really, really good form. Alex Marquez, you know, was a little bit hurt in the middle of the season, and I think Bez took over as the man who's been the real threat for Marquez. The only thing that's really stopping me from fully nailing that take is we've not had Mark for the last four rounds. And if nothing else, this year has proven count out Mark Marquez at your peril, essentially. And that's the real stress test in all of this, is that, well, we all know that Mark has been banzai compared to the other GP25 runners and most of the time his own brother on the GP24 as well. So the real stress test is going to be Mark on this, but it's hard to deny that the back half of the year that Bez has been as good as he's ever been, as arguably better than he was in 2022 when he was also third in the championship that season too.
Yeah, to say this at least, he's the most in-form MotoGP rider, and this not that doesn't have the last name Marquez, and the Aprilia. I dare say, for all the inconsistencies Ducati has, the Aprilia seems like they're bringing up the floor. And that could be a wild-ass take, because, again, I watch the least MotoGP out of, like, the three of us here, And that's not to say I watched none of it, which is very crazy how I got more predictions right than anybody else on the show. But it does seem like Aprilia is getting its game up. It's a more consistent bike than it had been. And in comparison to Ducati, it's kind of a more even package, it seems like. So good combination of in-form rider and in-form motorcycle. And Aprilia is just like, you know what? This is the last year before motorcycles get back to what they should be. So let's just open up the entire reservoir of Colombian Bam Bam in the design locker. And let's just go wild with some of the stuff that we're trying out at the postseason test.
I mean, Cam, as best as this comes from you, but how do you feel about Aprilia going into the break, especially now we've just come off the test yesterday and holy hell, that's a whole new bike.
Yes, what did they do but basically empty the clip and blow it up and start over regarding their aero package? The thing looks batshit insane. That's really where it begins and ends. Full dazzle camo as well, so they will get torpedoed. Although, given Bez's record in the second half of the season, along with the wins, I'm still mad about Indonesia. It is what it is.
They're going to make the most godless motorcycle ever built.
I wouldn't call it attractive looking.
No.
But it is very, very funky. The biggest thing that Aprilia has done over really the last year or so is make it a little bit less specialist, where the RSGP up to this point was all about the front end, all about just raw grip, and not always about being able to use that grip. Now they've been able to marry a really solid rear end on the bike to the existing great front end, and if the engine is a step behind Ducati, it's less of a step than it was. That said, Aprilia just got off their best year that they've ever had in the top flight. They've only just won two consecutive races for the first time ever. That is, they need to be winning more of those, and they need to be winning more consistently across more tracks, because how many races did Marc Marquez win consecutively?
I believe that is, in terms of Grand Prix, that's
seven.
Seven?
Seven.
15 if you include the sprints.
Yeah. Ducati had a bit of a down year on a bike that wasn't as consistent as what it was in the past. They also wrapped up every available championship and swept the top of the team's championship with multiple races to spare.
Yeah.
Now, a big element of that is the fact that you put Marc Marquez on Decimo Sedici. God help us all.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, VR46 was solid. Grazini was the second best team in the sport. Even if they didn't get both riders all the way up the standings.
Grazini had nearly 700 points this year.
For a true privateer, that is fucking bonkers.
Yeah. It's one of the best true privateer entries I can remember in modern MotoGP history.
Yeah. The other thing is Ducati have also brought... They are also emptying the tank regarding aero upgrades. They also brought a significantly changed fairing. That said, Pecco looked best when he was on GP24 aero, and what could only be assumed as a GP26, where it's just permanent marker over a 4 during the preseason test. So I guess we'll see.
I mean, you did have a small crash on that package as well towards the end of the test, which he ran wide at turn 2 and he binned it. It's
at least that wasn't a death tax as Ducati tucks the front end for no reason. He actually did just get the corner wrong.
Yeah.
Rider error. But yeah, Aprilia is getting there, but we also said this 2 years ago, where they ended a season super hot 2 years ago, and then they completely botched last year's bike. So, they're getting there, but they got to keep it going.
And I want to see how a healthy Jorge Martin, with a full off season to prepare, with no recurring setbacks, what he can actually do on this bike.
Yeah, he's still, in his own words, he feels like a rookie. Yeah. He did get to try not just the Arrow. They did bring a heavily revised chassis. Martin and Bezzecchi both seemed to like it quite a bit. Martin was more or less all running just the 25 aerodynamic package. Mm. We also need to see what a healthy Marc Marquez looks like, because we also found out in recent times that he's been running this year with two broken screws from previous surgeries in his arm. Because of fucking course he was.
It's laughable. It's laughable how stupid that man is sometimes.
What is he?
I don't know. He's not from this planet.
The greatest of our generation? The greatest of any generation? I don't know, man.
What the hell is this man?
I don't understand. I mean, I can only echo the sentiment that RJ just said as well. Like, I'll always hang on to Jorge Martin's Balloton Park, where he basically had to start from the back of the grid and ended up fourth and only 3 seconds behind his teammate Bez. That was arguably the most healthy that Martin pretty much was all season, in a year where he missed, God, I want to say 14 races.
Let's call it what it is. This was a lost season.
Yeah.
That's where it begins and ends. The man hasn't forgotten how to ride a motorcycle. He's still a MotoGP world champion. Only just had to hand over the number one to, I don't know, maybe anyone? Mark is forced to run it. Maybe it just sits on a sticker at the back of the garage.
There's no way they're going to make Mark Marquez run the number one.
The quickness with which Jorge Martin was ready to turn over the number one plate back to 89.
He gave that shit up with a quickness.
I want it.
Gonna quickly sidetrack to nerd out a little bit here about rider numbers and how some of the funny things that came out as a result of this weekend. Real quick.
Sure.
First of all, congratulations to the two Moto2 world champion, Diogo Moreira, who did wrap it up in Moto2 this past weekend. I mean, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion. He had a 24-point lead with 25 available. Actually, quite sad ending. Manu Gonzalez had to basically park it and then have to come back out and change tyres because something happened with the rear of his Dynavolt Moto2 bike where his rear tyre completely was gone after about 15 laps. He fell on his sword. He went back out there to finish the race, but Moreira was able to limp home in 10th to win the world title. Shout out to Izan Guevara. Remember him? He won his first Moto2 race this weekend. So, you know, that was a nice one for the 2022 Moto3 world champion. But yeah, nice little throwback there. But I love that Moreira had this great, big, fancy, elaborate, Brazilian football-based celebration, had the famous number 10s of yesteryear, like Rivaldo and Ronaldinho and Kaká, some of the Brazilian football legends we know and love, were celebrating with the number 10, and then realized, oh, wait, I'm going to MotoGP. Luca Marini's got the number 10. So he had to immediately change his number to the number 11, which you'll be using in MotoGP next year, which I thought was funny.
Which was used last weekend and this weekend by Nicolò Buliga.
Yes. So Buliga's got a problem now. If he ever makes it to MotoGP himself in 2027 or beyond, so he'd take the 11 instead. Also, I love that Toprak Razgatlioglu, he's now revealed he's going to be using the number 7 when he gets to MotoGP next year. He had his testing debut, of course, in the Valencia test on Tuesday. It means it's the second time Augusto Fernandez has had his number robbed out from underneath him. He got to MotoGP first. He got to use the 37, the number that Pedro Acosta wanted to use. But Fernandez didn't give it up when Acosta made his MotoGP debut. He had to use 31 instead. Fernandez lost
his job. They just styled as a 7.
Yeah, Augusto lost his job. So Pedro took the 37 the year after. Fernandez switched to 7 as a Yamaha test rider, and now Toprak's taken that number instead. So we've had Augusto Fernandez has had his number robbed twice in his MotoGP career already, which I think is hilarious.
Well, at least Diego Moreira gets to like pay tribute to Felipe Coutinho, as I'm looking through all the Brazilian number 11s in the history of the men's national team. We got a little bit of Romario.
Yeah. It's not quite the same, RJ.
It really ain't. It's not quite the Crestfield wax paper spokesman himself.
No. Going back to a little bit about Valencia itself, I guess we talked about Bears winning. Raul Fernandez, great day from him. Probably his best overall weekend in MotoGP. Fourth in qualifying, fourth in the sprint, and then second in the Grand Prix. That was a really, really strong weekend from Raul. Beautiful Valencia tribute helmet, by the way, if you haven't seen it. That was a very classy touch from Raul on the way out on that one. Good for him. Like I said, Aprilia's first 1-2 since Catalunya 2023. We forget about that, given it was the same weekend we nearly lost Pecco. Speaking of which, Cam, it wouldn't be Pecco Bagnaia's season without one more unfortunate DNF, and this one really was not on him, but, oh, man. It's completely obliterated by Johann Zarco on the opening lap.
Johann Zarco, I don't know what corner he was taking, but it was not the corner they turned in for.
I have the backstory here. Fabio Quartararo's ride height device was briefly not working on the opening lap.
Oh, what a shock.
Zarco thought that was going to be a permanent issue. It wasn't. Fabio was able to get it going again. But because he thought it was going to be a permanent DNF, he got out of the way of Fabio's bike. The problem was he didn't realize Pecco was on his outside. Ooh. So he's eased off the brake to take the long way around the corner to get out of the way, not realized Pecco is on his left, and Pecco gets put in the gravel trap by complete accident, and he can't recover it, and his day is done. It's the fifth DNF in a row in Grand Prix for Pecco, and six in the last seven to close out the year. That is just no, stop. We're not doing that. We are above the age of 12.
Describe what I'm doing for those of you listening and not watching along.
He's doing the 6-7. He's doing the 6-7. I can't
stand it. Get the fuck out of here.
I did not know that was like a reference to a rap lyric referencing a police code about someone being murdered on site, which kind of really tells the whole story of the last third of Francesco Bagnaia's season, doesn't it?
Except for Motegi, and then he chased that feeling ever since with 2024 parts on the bike, and it has meant nothing. Now, why was he down in the Japanese Cup anyway? Well, because he wasn't fast enough to get into Q2, and then they failed to refuel his bike properly.
What is this? I mean,
this seems so... It's very Hansi.
Oh, it is.
In a way.
It's a bit Hansi.
It's got the whiff of a Finder's lasagna from the UK, which unknowingly at the time was filled with horse meat. True story, by the way, in the UK for those who like old school British funny stories. But yes,
and now for our next step in the Haunts progression of Ducati Motor Holdings, Claudio Domenicali will now tell him to shut up and ride.
Get out of my head. I was about to say the exact same fucking thing. It's ridiculous.
I thought this was going to be a pivot to either Morbidelli or Mir.
No, that comes in a few minutes because there are many bones to pick coming out of this weekend. Yeah. For the second weekend in a row, Nicolò Buliga was better than Pecco Bagnaia, basically by process of elimination.
The terrifying fact, the Ducati factory team has scored 20 points since they wrapped up the Triple Crown in Japan. 14 from Pecco Bagnaia's sprint win in Sepang and the 8th he had in Portimao sprint. 4 from Marc Marquez's 6th place in the sprint in Indonesia, and the 2 15th places from Nicolò Buliga in the last two Grand Prix to close out the year.
You know the Mick Schumacher Snapchat chat meme where he's just like, done for the day.
Yeah.
That's the Ducati factory team once Marc Marquez went down with injury.
Yes, Marc Marquez, who was here this weekend with, I'm fine, thanks, duct tape to his hat.
Yeah, and please do not touch the shoulder.
no tapping on the collarbone.
Yeah, the left one's okay. The left one's good, is what he also said.
Oh, my God.
He also won a brand new car. He also won his 8th BMW M Award for best qualifier, even though he didn't race the last four weekends. He won a brand new... I think it was a new M2 Championship Edition, which is pretty cool.
M2 Competition, which is one of... I mean, despite the fact that BMW styles their cars these days by throwing shapes at the front end and then saying, done for the day.
Here's my beaver. Look at check out my beaver on the front. Doesn't it look pretty?
Hey, yo.
Not like that.
Yeah. But a very good car. Still a great driver's car. And
how does Valentino Rossi, Valentino Rossi, by the way, feel that as a BMW brand ambassador and sports car driver that hashtag he is racking up all these BMWs in his garage?
I don't know. Probably not great. I also love that Mark said to the BMW, he goes, I'm actually going to keep this one, which of course quite funny.
He's going to keep this one just to show it off against Alex.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, we all joked on the show that he was going to give it to Alex as like an FU, but no, he's actually keeping the car this year.
In fact, didn't they give Alex like an M2 diecast?
They did.
For the second place. That's scumbaggery.
That's such a
scale
take?
Was it?
Like 143rd. It was like this big.
Oh, dude, oh. He wasn't even a 118?
No. Brutal. No, that was funny as well. So yeah, I think that's his 8th BMW M award for best squad. I think it was 13, 14, 15, all the way up to 19. I think he won all of them up to that point, and then this was the first one he won since 19. Yeah. A lot to say to speak of best qualifier. We got to get into some of the comedy here as well, because there's some more comedy. And my God, did we get one for the ages from Frankie Morbidelli going into this race. I mean, I can't remember ever seeing this one in the 20 plus years I've been watching MotoGP, where, for those who don't know, and I'll try and picture the scene here. We're getting ready for the Grand Prix. Everybody's lining up on the grid. Aleix Espargaró stops his bike in a completely normal fashion. He's in his grid slot, you know, quick stoppy, get the ride height device activated. You know, obviously hunkers the bike down, ready for the start.
Importantly, on the 2026 Honda RC213V, he's on next year's bike because Honda is in Tier D of concessions
for now
to be able to test.
Yes. So yeah, Aleix was there as a wild card. He took his grid spot. Frankie Morbidelli does not look where he's going as he's trying to find his grid slot on the outside of the grid, and he runs clean into the back of Aleix Espargaró's bike, punches a hole in the side pod, breaks part of the front end aero, which ended up, I believe, in Aleix Espargaró's exhaust, which, again...
Then was shot out by the motion of that V4?
A small case of explosions, yes.
A small case of explosion. Something else broke during this incident.
Yeah, a bone in Franco Morbidelli's hand, which meant he did a lap, realized he had to quickly hustle the bike into pit lane to start from pit lane. Frankie did a lap and then realized, ow, my hand hurts, and then had to park the bike afterwards, and then... Turns out he'd broken a bone in his hand and he missed the Valencia test on the Tuesday through injury.
This is so fucking stupid. He just wasn't looking where he was going.
We've accused Frankie Morbidelli of having a large amount of brain fade this year, mostly after a qualifying lap was done. And he, according to David Emmett, was looking at his ride height device.
Really?
And didn't see...
Is that
see...
the MotoGP equivalent of looking at your phone while you're driving?
Pretty much. And also, I love the fact it was Aleix Espargaró that he rode into, his eternal nemesis. Those two hate each other.
Either he wasn't looking where he was going, or he knew exactly where he was going.
Yeah, I'd like to think it was the former on this one, because the latter would be far more malicious. I mean, looking at this in a very different sort of context. But
Frankie Morbidelli is a very good guy off the track.
Great guy.
He is like pure distilled bozo on it.
He's had a hell of a year this year.
This guy was arguably the people's champion of the weird 2020 season.
Yes. Time to interrupt that year.
Yeah.
We forget that one, that Frankie Morbidelli is a world championship runner-up.
He beat Fabio Quartararo straight up in the same team, while... Well, to pivot from the usual Tekken references to go over to Soul Calibur, mm-hmm. Fabio Quartararo was wielding Bozo Complete.
Yes. It was the Bozo equivalent of facing Night Terror, which, if anyone knows...
No. If you know, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Thank goodness I ringed him out.
Yeah.
I think that might be the reason why I ended up destroying a DualShock 2 when I was younger. I'm not happy.
You and about a billion other people. Choices.
Okay, I guess I feel less bad about it still, but I mean, this was not a good... If you were top two in the 2020 MotoGP World Championship, I'm afraid this was not a good weekend for you in Valencia.
Hit it, Cam.
Yo and Mir, get the fuck off my motorcycle.
Why? Has he earned a promotion?
Depends on whether you wanted to keep concessions or not at Honda. Because going into this weekend, Honda had a chance to get out of tier D of concessions.
Needed 9 points going into the weekend in total to go from tier D to tier C.
So what does Mir do in the sprint but fire it up the inside, tuck the front end, and spear Luca Marini straight out of the sprint, almost also collecting Yoan Zarco?
Oh, he bragged it was going to be easy going into the press conference on Thursday. They said, listen, if we just brought the bike home in last time out in Portimao, this would have been easy. And then
it would have been.
Then he tucks the front and completely obliterates himself and Luca Marini and picked up a long lap penalty for the Grand Prix for his trouble. And I like to call it at the time insubordination, quite frankly, because that's exactly what this was. I've tried with Yoan Mir this year.
I called this man the truth 5 years ago.
Oh, God.
He's had a much better year on account of the fact that it couldn't be worse than last year.
Pretty much.
He still has all of the factory Honda team's podiums in MotoGP since you-know-who walked out the door and they never found a suitable replacement for him.
How's the repair bill?
He's also had 13 DNFs in Grand Prix this year out of 22 races.
13. And a few of those... Like, half to two-thirds of those were not actually his fault. He got taken out a bunch this year. Because for the first half of the season, the Honda was a pig in a straight line. And it would invite people to try audacious moves on both of the factory Hondas. But the fact remains, this move was not on in a month of Sundays.
It was, I described it as during the live stream we were watching on as gratuitous in terms of violence and what that was. I mean, he's lucky.
You know what it was? I think it was simply a matter of wanting to make sure that we stayed the course with the process.
We are not tanking for picks anymore, unless, of course, you're the Oklahoma City Thunder, where you could win a championship and still potentially get a top three overall this year.
God damn it. Yeah.
Fuck the LA Clippers.
It's because the Los Angeles Clippers are putrid, bad, and that's just the whole deal with this aspiration bank and the sweetheart sweetener
Plant
payments
more trees.
To Kawhi Leonard.
Plant more trees. I digress.
I'm Steve Ballmer, and I'm
they
here
con
for
me.
I'm here for the
they
trees.
Me.
And
they
if you don't
me.
I'm Steve Ballmer. I think for the trees. And if you try to pay Kawhi Leonard, I'll break
ever
your fucking knees.
Compare Steve Ballmer to the Lorax again, I will take your fucking knees, Harrison.
Toilets.
That's my favorite Dr. Seuss book. Get the fuck out of here.
I couldn't help it.
Anyway, back to Honda. We're not tanking for picks anymore. We are in like a 500 rebuilding year now.
The thing is, as well, is that just to put a neat little bow on this story, turns out Luca Marini did literally just enough to get
equal
Honda up
or more.
Yeah,
well, not equal.
I'll quickly explain the math here for you, real quick, because I did work this out so that you don't have to. For those who don't know, the concession system In MotoGP means that you have to have a certain percentage of points to move up in tiers at certain checkpoints. This is halfway through the season and at the end of the season. This was the end of year checkpoint. So again, they reassess where everybody is. It's a percentage of the maximum points available. Now, to quickly wrap this up, 22 race weekends, 12 points for a sprint, 25 for a Grand Prix. That's 37 points per weekend, times by 22. It's 814 points. That's the maximum you can get over the course of the year. If you get more than 85% of that maximum, you're in Tier A. If you're at more than 60%, you're in Tier B. If you're between 35 and 59, you are in Tier C. And if you're below 35, you're in Tier D. I cannot stress this enough. Honda, and finishing seventh with Luca Marini in this race, took them to 285 points, because the way MotoGP works, only the lead bike counts for the manufacturer's championship, right? So they got to 285 points. Out of 814, 35%, which is the cutoff for Tier C, is exactly 285 points. It is exactly 35.01%. 1 point less and they wouldn't have made it.
Perfectly crafted precision mid.
Yes. Honda, literally to two decimal places, was 35% on the nose. And as the regulations point out, as Cam quickly mentioned, the regulations read equal or more than.
We got equal.
Equal is good enough.
It is good enough. Honda is out of Tier D concessions. This is a win for us, unironically. This is a win for us.
He got, like, Luca Marini got a very warm ovation when he got back to the Honda garage, because I think there's a lot of very relieved engineers that they don't have to do extra homework in the off-season. And just proof that they have taken a huge step in the right direction. Without Googling, gentlemen, can you remember how many points Honda had as a manufacturer last year?
Not many.
Without Googling it, and my wiki page is on the 2025 season, I'm going to say it's 100.
75.
I was going to say, I was going to say 70.
It was 75 out of a maximum 749 last year, because we only had 20 Grand Prix, and I think we missed a sprint somewhere. But yeah, basically, Honda had 10.1% of the maximum points last year. They're now at 35. That is an enormous jump in quality from the Honda garage, and they deserve their flowers in that garage. They've done a very, very good job over the course of the year, looking like a competent manufacturer again. Huge improvements.
They look confident, but I expect more out of Honda. We all expect more out of Honda.
We all do. Closer. They have quite literally never been this bad in a Grand Prix context. However,
I'd
much rather be here than they were where they were last year, which was so bad they lost the Repsol deal.
Yeah, the huge step in the right direction for Honda. Luca Marini, we'll talk about him obviously more in our season review in a couple of weeks' time.
Spared a lot of blushes for that factory.
Just by being consistent and bringing the bike home is exactly what Honda needed, and he's been a cool, calm beacon of good improvements and good results all through the back half of the year. And he's had some really good results. He only finished up 6 points behind Johann Zarco. It was top Honda in the end. And remember,
that
Marini,
win in Le Mans was doing heavy lifting.
Yeah, Marini missed 3 rounds of that punctured lung he suffered over in Japan earlier in the year. So that's a huge recovery from Luca Marini to get back to 13th in the standings in the end. So props to him, props to Honda. Tier C for next year, and they'll be very happy with their progress, I think, by the time they got to the year's end. We talked a little bit about Moreira and the Moto2 World Championship. I need to get off my chest something here. And look, I'm going to say something controversial here. Simon Crafar generally has done a very good job this year as lead steward.
What?
I don't actually think that's that controversial.
No,
it's not controversial. But remember, our motto as Motorsport 101 is that every race director, every chief steward deserves a beehive in their bedroom. And if it's not in their bedroom, it's in their shower every morning. If it's not in their shower every morning, it's in their refrigerator.
Yeah, like I must admit, Crayfaw
has been still better than NFL refereeing lately.
Oh yes, absolutely.
So what?
The bar is in hell here.
No, so is every 1920s disease.
No, I was gonna say yes. Here's some tuberculosis for you. This was Simon Crayfaw has generally done a very good job this year in his first year as chief steward. I can't really fault him. He's had a very, very good year overall. We've barely mentioned the steward in all season long. That's good. Like, by a country mile, the best officiated series of the major ones we cover in 2025. So props to Simon Crayfaw where that's concerned. However, he did fuck up the sprint. And I'll explain how he fucked up the sprint here, because this was a funky one. Jack Miller plowed Fermin Aldeguer during the sprint, trying to overtake him into turn two early on in that sprint race. There was contact. Bits of aero flew off everywhere. It was nasty. Arca
Brake Weekly-esque.
Yes. Miller was told to drop behind Aldeguer after. And so it was a drop three positions penalty, right? He was running ninth at the time, and Miller, and we found out later on, Miller deliberately ignored that penalty because he thought it was bullshit that Aldeguer basically turned in on him and didn't give up the position, essentially. So Miller, out of protest, essentially ignored the penalty. Crayfaw realizes five laps have gone and he's not taking his penalty yet. He's not dropped position. So then failure to comply, he was then given a long lap, which Miller then basically took the long lap because he thought if he didn't take it, it would have carried over into the Grand Prix. That is not how this works. He would have been given a time penalty at the end if he didn't take it. So let me get this straight. Miller was ninth. He was told to drop three positions. He ignored it. He was given a long lap instead. Miller took the long lap and he ended up 12th. Exactly where he would have been if he just dropped the positions in the first place. So in other words, the harsher penalty did nothing. Where'd it go, guys?
This to say absolutely nothing about the Grand Prix, where if Aurier Martin a couple rounds ago was a double long lap, why was Johann Zarco omega killing Pecco?
And then he got
just one.
That was, again, as I described, as gratuitous. If Martin and Quartararo, who both had huge turn one wrecks at Balaton and Motegi, respectively, earlier this year, got double long laps for causing a multiple bike pileup, why was Zarco's not when he took out Pecco? Because that was not even close from Zarco. That was way out. And that was on the level of Bez's double long lap that he'd had to take in Philip Island when he took Marquez out, quite frankly. It's a carbon copy of that crash, actually, now I think about it.
Yeah, just firing it up the inside with, in this case, the cause was different. But there we go again with punishing cause as opposed to outcome.
Again, I need to point out here that Crayfaw generally has done a very good job this year, so I give him his praise where that's concerned. He has done a far better job than Freddie Spencer has done in years past as chief steward. I hope that continues. I will put this one down as a bad round, a let's get the hell out of Dodge, we all want to go home and miss our families and dogs sort of weekend. No beehive as a first warning.
Better than Freddie Spencer is, like, the bar is under Ilmor's points total in 2006.
The bar is actually beneath Sky Sports
Halo.
They got
one. Fuck me.
Yes. A service which lasted, like, 0.0003 quibbies worth of time.
We're measuring time in quibbies now. I love
it
that.
It lasted 5% of a Liz Truss.
the cabbage won through again.
Shout out to Fabio Quartararo. It was confirmed in the last couple days that the inline four Grand Prix motorcycle is in fact dead. They will pivot to the V4. They tested with the V4, and Fabio gave it its proper send off by chucking it at a gravel trap and saying, "Fuck this, I'm going home."
Yeah, that's how you do it. Is it worth giving an extra couple of minutes talking about how bad the Sky Sports Halo launch was before we get out of here? I think it's we've done pretty much on this week.
All you got to know is, like, the first post was Silverstone 2021 with the caption, "When you spill matcha all over your labubu and you run out of tampons to clean it up."
It is high budget. How do you do, fellow kids?
How do you do, young girls that are potentially interested in sport? We want to connect with you.
We want to treat you all like foolish teenagers.
It's in a mild case of seriousness, because, like, the second video was Zoran Mandami saying, quote, he's risen us up at Sky Sports, which I thought was just... all kinds of congratulations to Zoran, by the way, and winning the mayor of NYC election as Cam passes out in the background. As much as there absolutely is a girl boss sports loving community out there in the internet, and we'd be ignorant to ignore something like that.
Yeah.
It is alarming at something like Sky Sports, who has 30 plus years of market research, audience numbers, and endless billions of resources to figure out how to best launch a channel that was covering a sports channel for girls, or in this case, clearly young girls. That was the aim that Sky Sports said they were doing. You can't monetize everything. And I fear that maybe the algorithms told them that maybe siphoning off, you know, women's led coverage was going to be beneficial in the long run, because it's not the only place that does it. ESPNW does it too. But they actually cover women's sports, not shamelessly pander to them like they're 12. It's alarming how... And I love me Sky Sports across the board in the most part. I've been a visitor. There's a couple of people within that I can genuinely call friends. I just find
this was a misfire.
This was a bad misfire. Yeah. And I'll say this: no woman could have signed off on that. Like that was a man signed off on that.
This is like a peak example of like corporate cringe trying way too hard to be relatable as a brand entity. Like, let the common person be cringe like this. That's fine. That's generally fine in a vacuum, as long as it's not hurting anybody. You have a responsibility to your audience, I think.
It's not fun when a corporation tries to get in on the kids' bits. You just come across as cringe. And then there's posting cringe, and then there's that. It didn't even last the weekend, which kind of says it all, given, you know... I logged into my LinkedIn page, and the amount of people in social media that shat on this from a great height, I have never seen such collective universal disdain for a product launch on social media ever. And I launched Motorsport Network's MotoGP coverage earlier this year. And that's a fine note to end this podcast on.
Will you knock it off with the self-burns?
1.04% of a Quibi's lifespan.
Quantitatively. That's a perfect note to wrap up this podcast on. I just want to say, folks, it's been a pleasure. I really hope you've enjoyed us covering MotoGP in 2025. It has been an incredibly wacky year by all accounts. Stories on and off the track. We'll put a nice, I said it's a lot this episode, neat little bow on everything in our MotoGP season review in a couple of weeks' time. Do check that out on the podcast network. But until then, a big thanks to everyone that's listening to all our episodes of MotoGP all year. I hope you guys have enjoyed it as much as we have. We're all now going to Turkey to get hair transplants due to all the stress. You know where to find us. We'll see you next week for Formula One's, well, part one of their triple header to close out the season. We're going back to Vegas, baby. We'll see you then. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cameron Buckley. Until then, good luck if you're top rack going for the Motorsport 101 Rider of the Year award. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Honestly, I think I'd rather just rock the Joey Logano low drag look.
Rock it.
He came home.
He came home. God bless him.